This is News Talk.
Some interesting stories when it comes to the whole area of sort of civil liberties and what we're allowed to do in this country or not. So look at the front of the Irish Independent. Off-licence opening hours would be significantly reduced under government plans aimed at clamping down on house parties and large social gatherings. The move was discussed at a specially convened cabinet meeting on COVID-19. This was the same meeting where ministers agreed to impose level 3 restrictions on the entire country. And they're looking at curbing opening hours for off licences to further limit social gatherings with alcohol. Obviously, a lot of these gatherings, there's a link between them and alcohol, so they are considering reducing the hours for off licences. What's amazing about that, already I think some people would feel, have pretty strict off licence rules in this country. Like, they close at 10 o'clock every evening. Is it 12 on a Sunday they open? So it's not as if they're open all night long for people to go and get extra booze and fuel themselves up with alcohol. But anyway, I don't know, would they put a curfew of maybe 8 or 9 o'clock that they close the off-licence? I assume they don't have an issue with the earlier opening, like an off-licence open before midday. That's probably not fueling house parties. It's probably more the 10 o'clock at night, they feel. So maybe an off-licence could close at 8 or 9 o'clock. It's not set in stone yet, but it is something they are considering, apparently. So that's one sort of kind of civil liberty issue. The next one, if you go to the front of the Irish Times, is about these super checkpoints which Gardaí are rolling out from today. So we'll have over 2,500 Gardaí taking part in these super checkpoints, 132 on the main roads every day, thousands more in towns and villages across the country. And the really interesting thing that the Irish Times talks about is the traffic implications. Major traffic congestion is expected due to these checkpoints. Gardaí have said they believe traffic congestion, especially on the approaches to Dublin and within the city and county, will be very heavy. And the Irish Times says the Gardaí are hopeful that the delays would prove so long that people will be stuck in traffic for so long that it would discourage them from leaving their home county and would encourage them to work from home. True Harris has already said that people driving around the country will feel very different from tomorrow. This was said yesterday. So the experience of driving in Ireland from this morning is going to feel very different, according to Gardaí. It's interesting. We were just chatting in the office here, and certainly on my drive in, there are way more cars on the road this morning, very early in the morning. I don't know if it's to do with level 3 or not, but a couple of us noticed that there's a lot more traffic on the roads. We obviously had these checkpoints when the first lockdown was introduced, and Gardaí were, you know, enforcing checkpoints and out on the roads. The only thing I will say is that it can be difficult then if you are an essential worker trying to get to work if you are delayed at a checkpoint. Because it used to happen to me when I was going in to cover the Department of Health briefings on COVID-19, where you'd get caught on the motorway for maybe 30 minutes or 40 minutes in a big queue to go through a checkpoint, excuse me, where then you would say to the guard that, yeah, I'm working, you know, covering or working journalist or whatever. And, you know, there are truck drivers and everyone was saying, yeah, we're working. But will this have a negative impact on essential workers who have to work, not the people who don't have to work from home or can't work from home, but the people who have to go and travel for work? Those traffic jams will obviously affect them too. Move on to the Irish Examiner this morning. Front page, strict level 5 rules still on the cards. This is about Taoiseach de Leo Varadkar. It's in a number of the papers where he privately told Fine Gael TDs and senators last night that a strict circuit breaker lockdown is still on the cards. And a lot of people will say, well, isn't that very interesting and ironic? Because that's kind of what NPHET recommended. Level 5 is obviously a strict lockdown. And what's a circuit breaker? Well, a circuit breaker is a sort of short, sharp lockdown that you target the virus real quickly and try and get rid of it as much as possible. So that's still on the cards, we are told. The Examiner also talks about Tony Houlihan, who was spotted in government buildings yesterday, and the rumour mill was gone into overdrive that he was having all sorts of crisis meetings with the Taoiseach and Taoiseach. Turns out that wasn't true. He was meeting senior civil servants instead. Interesting quote on the front of the Examiner from one pub owner. I swear to God, I have no faith whatsoever in government in this country. Only for I'd embarrass my father, I'd go and pick at Micheál Martin's house. Those are the words of Liam Barry, who owns a number of pubs in Cork. He grew up close to the Taoiseach's home, and all three of Mr. Barry's pubs are having to close under level 3 restrictions. Different story completely to do with Cork on the front of the Examiner. A West Cork town is looking to become the first in Ireland to have a rainbow crossing in support of the LGBT plus community. Members of the West Cork Municipal District Council want to build a rainbow-coloured pedestrian crossing in Clonakilty to show that the local authority backs inclusivity. It's all the idea of independent councillor Paul Hayes. And what I didn't know is that they have these rainbow crossings in London, Austria and some US states. So there we go, Clonakilty looking to lead the way on that. Irish Times talks today about O'Rahilly House. I'm sure you're familiar with this property, which was demolished last week, the home of a 1916 leader. Councillors in Dublin have now voted for it to be reconstructed. However, there's a warning from Dublin City Council's head of planning that the orders for the reconstruction of the house might not be enforceable. It's 40 Herbert Park O'Rahilly House, the former home of Michael Joseph D. O'Rahilly, the only leader to have been killed fighting during the 1916 rising, and the house was last week levelled. And this was after councillors had voted to have the house added to the protected structures list. But in the meantime, between when they said, yeah, let's add it to the list, and when they got to actually assess the building had been demolished. Councillors want it reconstructed. Now, Dublin City Council is saying, may not be that enforceable. We'll wait and see. Huge campaign in the local area and a lot of anger, it's fair to say as well, about the demolition of that property. Now, a lot of money spent on the EU election campaign. You may have heard about this. This is the money that was spent by candidates in last year's European election. And Cormac McQuinn in The Herald talks about slick campaign videos, coffee mornings, media training, makeup, and even the hiring of electric scooters was among more than €3 million spent during the election. Fine Gael just spent over €1 million. A total of €200,000 of that was spent on the surprise Ireland's Northwest victory for Maria Walsh, of course, the former Rose of Tralee. They also spent €60,000 on Mairead McGuinness. Francis Fitzgerald's campaign cost €132,000. And Independence for Change spent €76,000. Both Claire Daly and Mick Wallace, of course, were elected there. But just to give you an example of some of the things that were spent, where the, you know, sort of €3 million was spent on the candidates. €18,000 was spent on videos for former Rose of Tralee Maria Walsh. €1,500 was spent on stickers for Sean Kelly's recycled election posters. €1,300 was spent on coffee mornings for Francis Fitzgerald. €4,500 was spent on media training for four Fianna Fáil candidates. The Green Party spent €100 hiring an e-scooter for Kieran Cuff. And €29 was spent on makeup for Mark Durkin. I think €29 is cheap for makeup, is it? Yeah, it's pretty reasonable. All right, we'll move on to the Star this morning, back to gender issues. And this is the Law Society, which has launched a new policy to encourage solicitors to get rid of saying "Dear Sirs" when they're sending correspondence. "Dear Sirs" was the traditional way of writing a formal letter and indeed business emails, particularly in the legal profession. But the Law Society says it's now moving to make the greeting more equal and diverse. The reason why? Because more solicitors are now female than male. So why would you say "Dear Sirs"? And the idea is that instead of saying "Dear Sirs", you'd say "Dear Mr. or Ms." and use their surname, even say "Dear Colleague", or use their position like "Dear Managing Partner", "Dear Senior Associate", etc. I think most people think that'd be a good idea, although a lot of people like to hark back to the past as well and like to keep things formal. But no more for solicitors of the "Dear Sirs" when sending a formal letter. Final story for you this morning, a great story from the Times of London. It's on the front page. And we've all heard of the phrase, you know, you have to be streetwise. And some of you who may have moved from country areas up to Dublin or into some of the other cities may have been warned about, you know, oh God, be careful. careful in those cities now, they're dangerous. Well, it turns out that the mean streets of the city might not be so mean after all, because researchers have found that you're just as likely to be helped by a stranger in a city as in much smaller towns. In one of the biggest studies of its kind, scientists in the UK carried out 1,400 experiments in neighbourhoods across Britain. They looked at 12 cities and 12 towns, and they basically did three tests. So first of all, they put handwritten addresses, left them on the street to see if passers-by would post them. The second thing they did was they would drop a stack of postcards to see if a stranger would retrieve them. And the third was they would try and cross the road and record when motorists stop to let them cross the road. And one of the researchers had expected to find that the towns which had an average population of 12,000, so you know your smaller town or city, that it would be a lot friendlier than the cities. But overall, there was no difference. So no need to be afraid in the cities. People are just as nice as in rural areas or maybe your smaller towns. Here's a great quote from one of the researchers. It was one of those things where you collect the data, start analysing it, and you think, oh wait, this isn't going the way we're thinking. Then you start thinking, have we done something wrong? No, well, it just turns out genuinely people are good. Doesn't matter if they're in cities or towns. Anyway, that's your look at the morning papers.
On 106 to 108 FM and at newstalk.com. This is Newstalk.